win that came with a warning. That's what we're talking about on this episode as Florida State gets the 34-17 win over New Mexico State. And now that we've had time to go back and dissect things, look at the film, look at the numbers, how do we really feel about how this game went? Were there red flags? Are there things that could be fixed for Florida State? Or are there season-long problems that got exposed? So what's up, Noel Nation? I'm Jesse from Plant the Spear. Thank you for joining me for another episode. Michael will not be on this episode because we did a film breakdown on YouTube, which obviously doesn't make for good podcasting. But I didn't want to leave you guys out in the cold, and I wanted to bring you guys some content that you could listen to about this New Mexico State game. Now, if you are on YouTube, make sure you go check that out. I think you guys will enjoy it. It was our first film session since probably Alabama last year. We finally got our setup back figured out. And so we were a little rusty, just like Florida State was in the first game. But yeah, man, I think you guys will enjoy that. So make sure you go check that out. But I did want to bring you guys some quick thoughts on this. As again, Florida State got the win, but it just wasn't the win. It was too difficult, right? It was just harder than it had to be. And I think that's what the big takeaway was. Now, the good thing is for Florida State, this is one of those games that you schedule in week zero to allow that type of performance, right? Where you maybe don't play your best, but you still have the opportunity to walk out of there 1-0, walk out of there with a win. Like, had this have been Alabama and you played this way like you did last year's game, if you'd have played this poorly, you probably would have got your doors blown off. But thankfully, you had this New Mexico State game to kind of get your feet up under you and get these things on tape and get these things worked out before you play that tough game against SMU on Labor Day night and then have to travel to Alabama. So before we jump into this, I'm going to share some quick thoughts, and then I'm going to also talk offense, defense, and what our takeaways were after watching. We got the All-22 film, so we were able to watch everything, diagnose the numbers and all that stuff. But real quick, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is, of course, Alumni Hall FSU. Now, if you guys were in town for that New Mexico State game, hopefully you stopped by and got you some new Noel gear. If not, and you'll be back on Monday for the SMU game, make sure you hit them up. They're always my first stop in Tallahassee, and their location is 1415 Timber Lane Road, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. So let's start with some overall thoughts on this game, right? I think the first thing is, again, Florida State won. Right, they won. They walked out 1-0. It wasn't pretty, but they got the win, and that's what really matters. I also think when you look at the numbers, Florida State was never really in serious danger of losing this game. Right, they did plenty of things well. When you talk about the ground game on both sides of the ball, they did finish with 419 yards. They rushed for 217. They held New Mexico State to only 47 yards on the ground. They scored on all six trips to the red zone. The advanced numbers show that Florida State was clearly the more consistent offense. They held the edge in success rate 48.4% to 34.5%. So again, man, they were a team that really kind of, like, they controlled the game, but New Mexico State, through explosives and some passing stuff, they were able to really make this more of a game than it was supposed to be. And when you're a 31-point favorite and you win by 17, like, yeah, you still won by three scores, but it just didn't look as good as you had hoped. It didn't look as clean as you had hoped. And I think that was the biggest concern, which was something that I talked about going into this game, that it wasn't necessarily about the box score from, you know, beginning to end. It was more about what it looked like underneath the box score. And that was what raised the most concerns to me. Now, when you talk about this, Florida State did a good job in this game for the most part, knowing that they did go into this kind of treating it like a glorified scrimmage, right? I think in a lot of cases, the offense was very vanilla. They just tried to run their base offense and hoping they could just bowl over people. And they unfortunately were not able to do that, which is one of the main concerns that I have. The defensive side, you know, they did say that Tony White mentioned in his press conference this week that they were not vanilla on the defensive side of the game plan. But it did sound like he was hinting that they were trying to get as many bodies in game looks as they could. And I think that they will go back and review the film and they will go, hey, look, this guy was good with this. This guy was not good with that. We did well here and we didn't do well there. And they'll kind of hone that in for SMU. So I do think there was a little bit of a, you know, scrimmage style aspect to this, right? But where there were some concerns. I mean, obviously, New Mexico State, on passing down success rate, actually had an edge over Florida State. They held the edge over you in explosive plays. And so those are the things that you have to watch out for. Those are the things that you need to get corrected. Now, let's go through a few positives. First off, on the offensive side, the running backs do look legit, right? We came into the season expecting Florida State's running back rooms to be one of the strengths on the roster. And I think Saturday reinforced that because there were a lot of times the running backs really kind of made something happen in spite of the offensive line. Like when we went back and watched the All-22, there's a lot of times where they hand the ball off and we're just looking at the line of scrimmage like, where's the hole? And these guys just make something happen. And so, you know, Chroma goes for 14 carries for 115 yards and a touchdown. He had a 52-yard run late in the game, which was nice to see. Sam Singleton had 42 yards rushing. He also had four receptions for 54 yards. And he had a 46-yard kickoff return. I mean, let's be honest. There were most of the time on Saturday where Sam Singleton Jr. looked like the best player on the field. We also saw Trey Wisner come in late in the game and get 34 yards on only four carries. So all three backs looked pretty darn good. Now, Florida State's line was credited with 3.9 line yards per rush. That's basically how much the offensive line moves the defensive line back before they hit contact. But again, man, a lot of that was there was inconsistent blocking, and they were really trying to create stuff on their own. And that was New Mexico State. So that's a little bit of a concern that you weren't getting the push that you needed up front. Like, what's that going to look like when you play an Alabama defensive line, a Miami or a Clemson defensive line? Those are the things where you start to get really concerned. And we're going to talk about the offensive line a little bit more here in a bit. Now, another positive was the run defense, man. It was really good there for them. 23 carries for New Mexico State, only 47 yards. The advanced metrics look good as well. And I think one of the bright spots when you look at the run defense, even really kind of in the past, was I think Florida State's linebackers, when you look at Chris Jones and Makai Bayer, even Caleb LaValle, who is a guy that I think just needs to get some more snaps under his belt, I think all three of them played pretty well. The defensive line did a good job filling gaps on the runs. The one thing that I have to take into account here is New Mexico State's run offense was the dead last in the country last year. 136 of 136 teams, averaging only 77 yards per game. They got 47 in this one. So I'm going to take that stat with a grain of salt until we see Florida State do it against a better rushing team. Now, this was a new team for New Mexico State, obviously, but they are a pass-heavy team, which is why you saw them throw the ball so much. That's just kind of how their offensive system is created. But Florida State did do a good job. Like, even on the film when they did try to run the ball, guys were in the right place. There's some missed tackles that need to be cleaned up. There were a few TFLs that were missed that turned into short yardage gains. But, you know, those are things that can be cleaned up. Now, I will say I am a little bit worried about this defensive line because when you talk about the pass rush and you talk about some of the run fits here, I just worry that lighter, leaner approach that they're taking on defense might not work out if these guys can't start creating havoc. I mean, when you look at Florida State, they did have three sacks, but I think that number's a little bit misleading. When you look at New Mexico State's quarterback, he was kept clean on almost 74% of his dropbacks. Florida State only pressured him on 12 of 46, which is a 26.1% pressure rate. For comparison, New Mexico State was able to pressure Ashton Daniels on 31.3% of his dropbacks, and that's probably the most alarming stat from the game, that they were able to get more pressure on you. Now, that being said, they did run a lot of quick game. His time to throw was only 2.3 seconds. Ashton Daniels was up at 3.4, which was brought up some by busted plays where he was just trying to scramble and make something happen. But again, man, you got to find a way to get more pressure. You got to find a way to get home with those front three or four, depending on which front they're running, and your top guys. I mean, when you talk about Mandrell Desir and Daniel Lyons and Darryl Desir, they combined for 71 pass rush snaps with only three total pressures. Darryl Desir was the only defensive lineman that had a pass rush win rate over 23%. Now, we did see some things from Jalen Anderson that I liked. He did have three pressures on 26 rushes and almost had an awesome sack, but he just kind of rolled off the quarterback's back. Rylan Kennedy did have a sack, but he only had one pressure in 25 pass rush snaps. So I think the thing is, you really just have to be able to do this more consistently. You have to be able to get that pressure more consistently because, you know, you look on a lot of those third down conversions where they threw for these long yardage plays. Like, it's not like the quarterback threw it when he was about to take one in the chest every single time. It's not like the protection was about to break down. I mean, he just had time. And I know he got the ball out relatively quick, but You know, a lot of times Florida State defenders just weren't able to affect the pass. They weren't getting their hands up to block throwing lanes. You know, and these are things that just need to be fixed because, again, you have one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC coming to town next week in Kevin Jennings and SMU. And then, you know, Florida State, they knew they couldn't really generate a lot of pressure with their front four, so they brought a lot of pressure. Pro Football Focus charted FSU as blitzing 50% of his dropbacks. And the wild thing about that is the numbers actually got worse against the blitz. Trey Hedden, their quarterback, I think his name's Trey, New Mexico State's quarterback, completed 15 of 22 passes for 185 yards, two touchdowns, 8.4 yards per attempt. When FSU did not blitz him, he went 11 of 21 for 87 yards, 4.1 yards per attempt, no touchdowns and an interception. So think about that for a second. Florida State took defenders out of coverage in order to get pressure on the quarterback, and they just never really got home. And that, I think, is a problem. Now, you're going to have to blitz, right? You're going to have to get exotic. You're going to have to bring pressure. I'm sure they didn't show them all the looks. But, man, again, when you're Florida State and the scheme that they play, and which is one of the most frustrating things that we watched on Saturday night, when you talk about that soft zone coverage that we cannot stand, where you're giving them 10 to 15 yards of space underneath almost every single time, you're basically giving them free first downs all game, which is something that we saw eat Florida State up last year. The Virginia game is one that comes to mind. And if you watch the film review that we do on YouTube, this is like the very first play. This is the first thing we stop and do is circle this 10 to 15 yards of cushion underneath. And when you do that, when you play that style of defensive coverage and you can't get home with four, you can't get pressure, and you're taking guys out of coverage, that's like playing with fire with gasoline-soaked pants on, man. You're going to get burnt. And that's how you got torched for 272 passing yards against New Mexico State. So, I mean, that's something that I really wish they would revisit the scheme. I'm not confident they're going to do it, but they really, really have to fix what they're doing there, especially on third down. I mean, the third down defense was absolutely atrocious. I don't know how we went from, you know, third and Kelly to third and Fuller to now third and White. It's just like maybe we need to bring in a third down defense coordinator or something like that, because it has just gotten ridiculous. But I will say, when you talk about the coverage overall, as we talk about the pass defense, you know, again, I feel encouraged by the linebackers. I'm concerned about the defensive line, but I think there are some things you can do with that. I mean, some of it's just going to have to be guys just beating blocks, like, period. I mean, you're going to need your guys to do just a little bit better. But one thing that I did see is Kevin Wynn was on a snap count, only played 8 snaps. And Jordan Sanders, the Texas State transfer defensive tackle, who I was a little bit critical of him in the preseason. I actually thought he played pretty darn well. He had a couple of grown man plays where he's throwing some guys around. Look, I think you're going to have to play those two more. You're going to have to get them off a snap count as fast as you can, because those are two of your bigger body, strong defensive tackles on the interior that can truly kind of play that nose technique. I mean, even in the 8 snaps we highlighted that Kevin Wynn played, you could see he was actually one of the ones that would push the offensive lineman into the backfield, and you need that on a more consistent basis. So maybe you have some personnel stuff there that you could do to help that defensive line. Again, I was encouraged by the linebackers. We saw Omar Graham make a nice read on a crossing route underneath. Chris Jones put himself in positions a lot. Mekhi Bayer might have been the best linebacker on the night. He was all over the place in pass and run fits. And then again, Caleb LaValle was good too. But when you talk about that secondary, it was the biggest and most surprising concern of all, right? I expected that to be a strength, and it looked like an unmitigated disaster at times on Saturday night. Now, with that being said, it wasn't really like you had one cornerback getting cooked all night. Now, I'm sure there are some reps that Jabril Rawls really would like to have back, but Quindarius Jones looked good. Nehemiah Chandler looked good. Obviously, Quindarius Jones had a massive PBU and then followed up with a pick. So I definitely think that they did good. But a lot of this really came down to just situational problems with a lack of pressure, a lack of leverage, spacing, communication. A lot of that was the problem when you talk about what Florida State struggled with in the secondary. And really the key to understanding that is getting beat between the numbers, right? Where you have the most concentrated number of defenders. Like, if you had got beat on the outside repeatedly, maybe that's just one cornerback that just can't cover one of their receivers. But you got beat up the middle badly. When you look at Trey Hedden's passing chart, between the numbers, he completed 17 of 22 passes for 218 yards and two touchdowns. He only threw for 272, so that means 80% of his passing yards and both touchdowns came between the numbers. When you go back and watch the film, again, a lot of that is just, it's just really guys not knowing where to be, not knowing how to pass guys off, too soft a cushion, as we talked about, safety's not being in the right spot. Those are the things that really get you. I mean, you look at that first touchdown from New Mexico State where Jabril Rawls gets beat on the deep post, and it looks bad on tape because the guy ran a good route and he kind of put Rawls in a blender. But at the same time, like, Rawls expected there to be safety help over the top, and KJ Kirkland just wasn't there. And Tony White even said that in his presser. He said, look, man, he should have been there to try and make a play on that ball and probably pick it off, but he wasn't where he needed to be. And so, you know, you almost feel bad that it looks bad on Jabril Rawls for that. Now, granted, you know, maybe he wasn't the best in coverage on that play, but again, man, that was one of the ones where safety help over the top just was not where it was supposed to be, and they made a good play. I mean, New Mexico State made some plays. Like, I got to give it to them. Their quarterback had a pretty good night. He was fitting it into tight windows, and he was taking advantage of a pass defense that wasn't ready for the challenge, frankly. And then you look at the second passing touchdown by TK King, 34-yard touchdown. You know, man, when you look at this one, this was just a case of he broke across the middle and the safety just did not react fast enough. He got up underneath him. There was no safety help over top because they had ran a pretty spread out formation where everybody had to be in coverage. Florida State brought a little bit of heat. One thing I didn't like on that play was they brought some heat from both linebackers and they dropped a defensive lineman into coverage, which I'm never a fan of. Like, why drop a 280-pound defensive lineman, 290-pound defensive lineman into coverage when he should be rushing the passer and not the linebacker? Now, the linebacker almost made a sack, but he didn't get home. And coincidentally, the exact same place on the field where that linebacker vacated that space was right where they hit that route at. And so it was Ricky Knight in coverage with no help over the top. And, you know, Tony White talked about it. It was just a young player that made a mistake. And he's going to learn from that. And it's just things like that happen. And so, again, man, these are the things that I'm encouraged because you can clean those up, right? You can clean up your spacing issues. You can clean up your communication issues. It was a little confusing in the press conference when Tony White talked about, you know, it's different when you're trying to communicate in a game situation, the crowd's making noise, you know, and you can't just yell at each other across the field. And my first thought was like, okay, so y'all don't pump crowd noise into practice to practice these situations? That seems pretty strange, right? But it's something that they can certainly improve on. So, all in all, when you talk about the defense, it was the bigger concern of the night than the offense, but I think it was also a little bit more fixable than maybe some of the issues that we did see on the offense. But again, you're going to need those guys on the defensive line to step up, and you're going to have to get that secondary to get on the same page fast, right? I think it was not more about one guy wasn't good or another guy wasn't good. It was just about how all the pieces operated together in the pass defense. And again, with one of the better passing offenses in the country, in the ACC coming to town on Monday, you better fix it fast, because if not, Kevin Jennings will pick you apart and make you look silly. And they're going to be able to run the ball better than New Mexico State will too. So you may even have to start devoting some bodies to the run, which is going to help open up the pass. So this is something that, you know, they have a couple of extra days with the Labor Day game, but you have got to get that stuff cleaned up. Now, let's flip over to the offense and talk about what we saw over there. And I think when you talk about Ashton Daniels to begin with, I think it was a little bit of a mixed bag, right? He needs to speed up his timing a little bit. His time to throw was 3.42 seconds. But when you look at what he did from a clean pocket, it was down around 3 seconds. And then when you look at what he did from a pressured pocket, it was up over 4 seconds. So that's just a guy trying to make something happen whenever the protection breaks down. But when you talk about Daniels, I actually think, you know, it was a mixed night, but when you kept him clean, I think you were able to see the ceiling of what he's able to do. In a clean pocket, PFF credited him with being 15 of 19 for 198 yards, 10.4 yards per attempt. And they did credit him with the interception. under a clean pocket, but I disagree with that. He was running after the protection broke down out to the sideline. It was a throw that he never should have made. He actually had about three of those on the night. One got picked, two did not. He got fortunate with that, so those are things he's going to have to go back and clean up. There were a few like, oh, please don't throw that, and he did, and just one of them didn't go. You know, you had the defender cutting underneath, and he got. But then when you look at under pressure, he was 2 of 8, only 25% completion percentage for 4 yards and a half a yard per attempt with a touchdown. And so really that defines the offense, the passing offense in two lines right there, right? But when you look at what he was able to do from a clean pocket, and you talk about the pass that he hit to Danzy early, the 44-yard pass up the seam to Danzy, I mean, that was an absolute dime. Now, if he throws it a little bit farther or, gets it out a little bit earlier, I think that Danzy doesn't have to break stride. He catches that and goes for 6. He did have to turn around and adjust and come back to the ball. But, I mean, it was a beautiful throw. Then he also hits Javon Boggs late in the game for 25 yards on 3rd and 6, which was a big play. Almost went for a touchdown. They scored on the very next play. And so I think you did see, you know, he hit Deuce on a couple of nice routes. I think you definitely saw the flashes of good. You also saw some flashes of, well, this is kind of what we were worried, right, about with Ashton Daniels, especially when he gets under pressure. But overall, obviously, we're gonna understand, too, that the passing game was not showing a whole lot. So I do think that they will be able to figure some things out to get the receivers a little bit more involved. To be honest, there were a few concerns in there where I saw that, you know, they weren't quite a lot of guys open downfield when you watch the All-22 tape. And you're going to need those guys to get better separation there as well. Now, of course, let's talk about the backs. Again, we're talking about the positives when we talk about that offense. I think your three backs are going to be good regardless. I think you're good there. So I like that you have all three. You had a stable. I think they actually used the carries appropriately last night with how they divided them up. So I'm encouraged about that. But we got to talk about that offensive line. When you bring up that offensive line, that is one of the major concerns. But I think it has to be defined a little bit differently than maybe we did just watching the raw game footage, right? Going back and watching the tape again, doing a rewatch, I think you can isolate the O-line problems to more of a right tackle problem. Now, your left guard was not superb either, but we'll talk about him across the board. Now, I think Xavier Chaplin had a pretty solid night at left tackle. He did have one rep where he kind of got yoked by a guy and ended up making a tackle for loss. So that's something, you know, you just want to see your 6'8 veteran offensive tackle not let that happen against New Mexico State. But it was like one bad rep on the night. Otherwise, I thought he was a very solid, steady force for you at left tackle. Left guard, when you talk about Andre Otto, you know, it wasn't a bad night for him. He obviously did have the big costly tripping penalty in the red zone there that backed Florida State up 15 yards, ended up costing them a touchdown. And then, which we actually did see on film, he tried to trip somebody else earlier in the game. So that's something he's going to have to learn not to do. He did get beat on a few plays. He did get kind of run through by a linebacker at one point. He had a couple of bad reps in that game, both passing and running, a couple of miscommunications, a couple of blown assignments on the offensive line. But I think a lot of what you see from Otto can be fixed because a lot of it is just technique and experience. I think those are the two things that stood out with me for him. Like if he can just get his base a little bit, you know, cleaner, like he's got nose over toes too often, where the defensive lineman or linebacker is able to just kind of move him around because his weight balance isn't right. Those are things that can be fixed, and I'm sure they're going to work on those. And then I thought Braden Welch-Joyner at center did a pretty nice job on the night. Nate Papps at right guard did a pretty nice job on the night. Just a few assignments that they could clean up. You know, I was worried because they weren't opening gaping holes for sure, and that is a concern, right? But I think the biggest problem when you talk about the offensive line is the right tackle. I think we have a concentrated problem at one position, and that is with Chimdia Nwayu. And look, man, I want to say honestly, like, this was his first game coming out of SCS. This was his first game at the FBS Power 4 level. He can get better. It just looked like he was physically overwhelmed at times. The game was moving a little bit too fast for him. He kind of had struggled knowing where to be and when, but it was mostly kind of physical stuff, right? Which is what concerns you because can you fix that? I honestly think there's going to be maybe you're going to have to look at kicking Paps out to tackle. You're going to have to maybe look at Jonathan Daniels at tackle a little bit just to see what those guys got. Obviously, you can bring in Paul Bowling to fill in at the guard spot. You don't really want pass to tackle, but it might be the best answer that you have if you don't get that right tackle spot fixed. Now, that being said, because you failed to put the opponent away like you were supposed to, you didn't get a chance to see any of those backups play, so you don't really know what they're going to look like. So I think you're going to end up rolling out the same starting five against SMU and just hoping that it looks better. But man, if it doesn't get better, that's a real weakness that I'm sure a lot of these teams, SMU included, are going to try and attack. And that's something that really does concern me, because that's one of the things I'm just not sure if it's going to be able to be fixed. And I mean, across the board, the offensive line did not get the push that you wanted to. I mean, they ran for over 200 yards, which was nice to see. But again, man, they just, when you go back and watch the All-22, especially from the end zone view, and you slow it down, there's just not a lot of push. There's not a lot of just moving dudes, which does concern you when you're talking about that's the second weakest opponent you're going to play all season. You know, Alabama's defensive line, Clemson's defensive line, Florida's defensive line is going to be a lot tougher than that. And if those guys can't start moving bodies, you're going to be in trouble, man. And so I think I would like to see Ashton Daniels at quarterback use his athletic ability a little bit more. We didn't see him run a whole lot on Saturday night. Now, offensive coordinator Tim Harris did say that he was trying to keep his eyes downfield to make plays, but they did have to remind him, like, hey, that's a part, that's a big aspect of your game, and you're going to have to start using it. And I think that is a way that he can help that offensive line out a little bit more. I did like the screen game that Florida State used on Saturday night. I think that helps your offensive line out a little bit there. I had a couple of big plays from that. And so again, man, just to clean up a couple more things here, final thoughts on the game. Florida State did go 6-for-6 in the red zone with 4 touchdowns and 2 field goals. You know, that's something they struggled with last year. So it was nice to see them be perfect in the red zone. Gabe Panikowski hit 2 field goals, 1 from 43 and 1 from 41. So special teams looked good. We caught punts. That was a big improvement, right? That was a huge one there. Jason Lopez looks confident back there fielding the punts. Sam Singleton, of course, had that big kickoff return. So, you know, again, overall, man, I think there are some real red flags that came out of this game. I think there are a lot of red flags that could be fixed. I would say probably me and Michael both agreed about 75% of what we saw on tape are things that can be fixed. It's just how fast can you fix them, right? How fast can you get these fixed before Alabama and SMU are on the schedule, right? Those are, you don't have time to mess around. You have to get these things fixed. Now, at least the good thing is you do also get a bye week coming out of SMU, so you have an extra week to continue to work on things for Alabama. But you know, you can't let these things linger around long enough to where now you're 2-2, you know, and still trying to figure out things that should have been figured out in camp by the time you get to that Virginia game, who, oh, by the way, beat the brakes off NC State on Saturday night, or on Saturday. So that game just looks a whole lot tougher now. So I mean, you got to get right, and you got to get right fast. But I do, again, I think some of it was rust. I think some of it was just first game jitters. I think some of it was real concern, right? I think there are some things that you're going to be limited in throughout the season. So, you know, that's kind of what we're looking at from game one to game two. They say teams make their biggest jumps in that window. And so that's what we're going to be looking for against SMU. I'm not saying that Florida State's going to come out and, you know, maybe get the floor wiped with them by SMU. I'm not saying that at all. I do think SMU is going to look at this film and they're going to try and attack your weaknesses. I think Florida State now has the opportunity to look at their own film and identify their own weaknesses and try and you know, figure this thing out. But of course, we're going to bring back another episode with you guys this week for the full SMU preview. Be on the lookout for that in the next couple of days. But yeah, man, again, I think at the end of the day, there are some real problems on this team, and I think there are some things that are fine, right? I think there are some things that are correctable. I think there were some positives when you talk about the run game and the run defense and the special teams and some of the things we saw from the quarterbacks and receivers. I think some of that stuff was pretty good. So all in all, you know, this was a win. Florida State is 1-0. But there were some warning signs in this, and so it's some things they're going to have to get fixed and get fixed quick. So I just wanted to come to you guys. I think we'll wrap it up here and bring you some quick thoughts from what we saw during that game. you know, I wanted to, didn't want to leave out my podcast listeners. We appreciate you guys for your support over the years as well. So make sure you give us a rate and review on the podcast. Make sure you check out our website, plantthespear.com. We got written articles. We just dropped 2 written articles over there. And also be sure to join the PTS fan community. We had a good chat in the good time in the game chat on Saturday. Got a little spicy at times, but, you know, again, we're going to be back every game day talking in there, having a good time. That's where all of our content lives. So I would appreciate if you guys check that out. And again, man, check out Alumni Hall FSU. Save 10% with code SPEAR. And we appreciate you guys rocking with us. We will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.